Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2021 for the fifth and final stream this evening. This is the first night where I've done five. It was a bit of a scheduling conflict, but we resolved it this way. There will be several other nights where there are five, but it's a packed schedule. I think there are going to be 64 streams in total. So it's busy. But anyway, this time I'm here with Ryan Turnipseed. So, Ryan, would you like to introduce yourself to the audience?
Yes, thank you very much for having me. It's a very Herculean series of streams that you've set up here. Originally I was a musician, and then I found out that a bunch of people didn't know what was going on with Generation Z, put out a bunch of videos on that. Before then, I was on Academic Agent streams and Radical Liberation streams, the latter of which was on Tuesday evening, if I remember correctly. So I've been around those circles a lot. If you've ever watched their streams, you've probably come across me. If not, I usually bring up topics related to theology, history, art and culture, things along those lines.
Right. Okay. And when did you get into these? It tends to be that people grow up fairly middle of the road, or even quite liberal, or sometimes libertarian, and find themselves dissatisfied with the modern world. So, what is your origin story?
So, for the most part, when I was being raised, it was by my great grandmothers, because both of my parents worked. And one was born in 1937, the other was born in 1940. One was a Southern Democrat, and the other one was mostly apolitical, but still had a lot of the values that you would get out of the Great Depression. So that ended up having a large impact on me. That's how one taught me to pray, the other one taught me to call people idiots if they're being idiots. So that's kind of the upbringing I had. My dad is anywhere between, depending on his mood, a leave me alone, I don't care about any of you anarchist, or a very, very staunch paleo conservative. So, depends on the mood. That was my upbringing for the most part.
And how did you find yourself in the, I don't know what you would call the sphere that you're in, but tell me the history there.
So, originally I was in Academic Agent's Discord server. We had a voice chat one night. The topic of demographics in the United States came up. It was an argument, but it's not like we were yelling at each other. We were just disagreeing and talking. Academic Agent liked the points that I brought up, so he brought me onto a cigar stream. From there, I was on a Radical Liberation's economics podcast for a few episodes. I kind of co-host it now while the previous co-host is gone doing his business. For the cigar stream, we did a whole series where we would go through lists of values and basically discuss how reactionary they were, or, how good they were, how liberal they were, things along those lines. On Radical Liberation's channel, it's going through a lot of American history or world history. We analyzed Malthusianism quite famously, and how that has pervaded a lot of modern thought and how insidious it is. Quite recently, we did a series of streams on how the American Republic turned into the American Empire, and basically spread its warped values of democracy and social liberalism to people that had no want for it. They imposed it on the South. They imposed it on the natives in the West. They imposed it on, former colonies in the Caribbean, places that have no reason to be democratic in nature. Anyways, that's what the series was about. And then that led me, when Academic Agent did a set of streams and videos on Generation Z, when he came across a Twitter thread that he found particularly egregious about somebody.
Oh, was this about the abs?
Yes, this was. And I was on a stream.
See, I'm not even on Twitter, and I heard all about this.
I was on the stream that he did for that. And my whole point of being on that stream was that I came up with a list that I witnessed from what I saw in high school, which, you know, I just graduated from it in May. List of what I saw in high school. And I basically went on there and I said, yeah, this ab stuff that you're finding on Twitter, it's terrible, but it is much worse out there on the ground. I still have the list. Wouldn't like to go over it because it's pretty grim and, you know, this is a Christmas stream.
Is this about different fetishes that are now popular?
This is about just anything that I witnessed that would make any previous generation puke, essentially. You have groups of students pressuring younger students into thinking that they are trans, into, you know, mutilating themselves. You have people fornicating out in public. You have, you know, people self-harming in public. You have people leaving contraception in public. You have, I can go on. I would rather not. That's all out there.
Yeah, that sounds pretty gross. The trans thing, I mean, it's easy. Like, I'm quite a bit older than you, obviously. And, you know, I was at school, high school, 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And I'm sure it's a very different landscape now. And it's easy for someone like me to think the worst, to assume the worst. And it's also easy for someone like me to be very naive about it. Specifically the trans thing, how prominent is that in the life, just the awareness of the average high school student today in America?
Let me clarify. It's not like I'm in San Francisco or New York City. I'm in Oklahoma, in the rural parts of Oklahoma. So this is supposedly like the conservative heartland of the U.S., those high schools. I came across maybe six people that claimed to be trans, which is probably six more than you ever came across.
Yeah.
Another point on the list is you'd have people that would openly cross-dress in the hallways and things like that. It's accepted. You can't really speak out against it either, because you either get, you know, Zoomers that are so immersed into irony that they can't accept, like, a genuine objection to anything. So if you object to a obvious issue, like people mutilating themselves and cross-dressing in public, they'll just say, ha-ha, right-winger. And then you have the other people that think that you're literally Hitler for saying that, you know, this shouldn't be happening.
Is what you just said there, is there a lot of nihilism and sort of defensive sarcasm?
Yes. So Generation Z has been raised on a foundation that completely lacks in sincerity. And if you look at their slang or their lingo, you know, they will say for real, they'll say dead ass, they'll say, what's another one? Like, no cap is another one. All of these things emphasize that they are being serious, because normally they operate on such insincerity that it is hard to tell when they are actually being serious. It's like the old story of the boy that cried wolf, but it's on literally everything, and you have to take extensive measures to, like, make a point that you're being serious here. That applies to everything. So you get defensive sarcasm to a level that's insane. You, like, if you're there on the ground, it's that 24/7 about everything that ever gets brought up is defensive sarcasm and irony.
That must be extremely tedious.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And
very
wearing as well.
Yeah.
Because presumably they think they're being clever, but it's...
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. You get a lot of arrogance, which, you know, this isn't new among generations. Generation Z is not the first one to have, you know, people that are arrogant, but I'm not going to even make the claim that it's more common. It's just a lot more pronounced, being as how, you know, if you only ever speak in sarcasm and irony, arrogance goes right along with that. So you're just going to get more of it displayed, regardless of how much is actually there. So you get people that, like, self-style themselves and all these grand titles as, like, an intellectual or something, when they, in reality, they've just read, like, two books in a year, and we'll get there, like, education quality.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of dislocation and lack of rootedness. It sounds like they're scrambling for, I mean, I know that, you know, teenagers, adolescents have always scrambled for identity, but it sounds like there's nothing that they can latch onto.
Yeah. So, okay, I have a video series, and I'm like, a lot of my ideas are not like, I'm ripping from a lot of those things just because it's what I've seen. Like, it's what I've saw. I'm just going to keep saying the same things over and over. Generation Z, for the majority of them, were not raised in the church. They were not raised in, like, an intact family. They weren't raised in any sort of traditional moral standards. It's either, you know, the parents are absent, the parents are broken, the church is completely gone, you know, everything's relative. They don't have anything to rebel against. So whatever identity they could have had, family history, church identity, even identities as, like as common interests, it's not even there. One of the things that I brought up that completely astounded people was that you get social cliques still, except they aren't, you don't get the jocks and the nerds and the musicians or whatever. They're just entirely random. You will get groups of people that will self-segregate themselves like normal cliques, but they will have no uniting factors in them. And like, this is the level of a social disillusion that we're at. Like, this is even basic things like, you know, cliques that naturally develop among these people, like, they aren't even really cliques. They're just groups that happen to come about each other.
So when you watch, I don't know if you watch films from the 90s or 80s, these sort of classics that I certainly mm-hmm. grew up with, and you see the American high school then, I mean, the cliches of the American high school are, you've got the jocks, the weirdos, yep. the nerds, the sort of bookish types. You've got the normal girl, and you've got the prissy, yep. preppy, beautiful preppy girls. Types, yep. That's probably it. Would you say that those groups are just dissolved now?
They don't exist as groups. You will have people that will have the attributes of them as individuals, but they don't organize based off groups. And even then, like, take the jocks, for instance, in those movies, the things that they end up doing, the bullying or whatever that we would consider it nowadays, they would get prosecuted for. So, like, you don't even get this sort of social self-correction with the main group that's supposed to do that. Everyone just kind of, you know, equalizes. It's like entropy. You know, once upon a time, you had these hierarchies that were unequal, and everything has just been so completely leveled and randomized that you only really have those attributes on the individual level. You'll have preppy women, you'll have jocks, you'll have nerds, but there's no social segregation surrounding it. It's all, like, that high school no longer exists, those images.
See, it's a shame in a way, because one of the cliches of those sorts of films, those movies, was that the nerd or the outsider would get his revenge against the jock by, at the yeah. last second, he would get the punch in, and the jock would look like, it would just be baffled and spluttering in disbelief that he's been bested, and he'd be humiliated. And that was like a thing where, you know, the weedy kid gets his revenge, and he becomes right. a man by besting the bully.
Right, he I had guess a rite of passage.
Exactly, a rite of passage. I guess that would now be impossible because he would now get prosecuted.
Well, yeah, kicked out, suspended, prosecuted, you know, and then something else that's all, like, these laws have been in place for a while, and they have stamped down on all this to the point where, like, you know, even if you were to, like, enact all of that, the guy that just had his rite of passage wouldn't even really be accepted because, like, they don't like this needless violence or whatever. Like, they don't see the sense for, they don't see the need for violence and social correction, even if it is very, very minor bullying.
Yeah, so everything is sort of taken care of by the authorities, the state.
Right. Yes, and selectively, like we've already covered, they don't enforce, you know, moral decency. They don't, you know, stop students from cross-dressing or mutilating themselves or taking drugs in the bathrooms in the middle schools or anything. Which, I mean, if you're in the UK, that's ages 12 to 14. You know, drug problem in that age range. Like, they aren't stopping this stuff, but they will stop people from enforcing social standards on their own.
Yeah.
That's something they will do.
So, is it basically a sort of zoo?
Yes. Yes, that is a great way to describe it.
All right. Okay. I was going to elaborate, but I was going to narrow it down a bit.
No, why? It sounds like a zoo
where the zookeepers intervene now and then when something natural happens.
Right. And you don't even have the enclosures. All the animals are just mixed in among each other. And, you know, it's what's the Ghostbusters quote? Cats and dogs are sleeping with each other in the streets.
No, like, living together.
Yeah. That's essentially what it is there.
So you do watch 80s movies.
Yeah, I have. I didn't watch.
That's good. I'm glad.
I didn't watch many films throughout high school, and now that I'm out, I've had a few very good friends that have sent me a bunch of films going back to the 1960s that I've been watching, and they are spectacular.
That's an interesting thing. Why are they spectacular to you?
So you have a lot of elements in those movies that you just do not get in modern culture anymore, especially from the eyes of someone like me, a Zoomer, where this is all you've ever seen. Like, I was born in 2003, and I only started like recognizing these things just a few years ago for all of your standards. Whenever you take The Time Machine, for example, the 1960 movie, you have, like, actual male friendship in there. Like, the guy has the scientist's home in a trust and preserves it. And as he goes into the future, it turns into a park that's memorialized to him. You wouldn't really get that sort of male relationship today. You would have people that would either pressure the two into saying they're gay, which goes either way. Either they become that, or they reject it completely and the whole thing falls apart because it's ironically socially unacceptable. You know, for males to have like a strong relationship and not be, you know, homosexual. So you have that there, that you don't see today. You have this, I don't really even know how to describe it. Like, you have a guy that goes into people that are completely disconnected to him, except for the fact that they are the future of him. Like, the Eloy and the, I forget what the other ones
are called. The Morlocks.
Yes, that's it. The Morlocks. Like, they're the future. He feels a connection to them. Yeah. He feels the need to basically bring the light of knowledge back to them, basically as his descendants almost. Like, that's how his civilization ends up. That's something else you wouldn't see in a lot of the heroes that are shown today in modern film and cinema. They would, if they got there, they would basically either seek to rule it, seek to plunder it, or, you know, have some paused value that they sought to impart on it or learn from it. If I remember correctly, there was a modern rendition of the film where that's basically what happens, is the guy goes to the future and tries to learn from them or something, and it ends up being very, you know, left-wing and egalitarian. That's all of our movies are. You don't get someone that, you know, sees something greater than themselves and tries to fix it, really. You don't get that.
Yeah, I haven't watched any of these Marvel comic movies, but I have seen clips from them. The modern ones, the 2010s. I actually did see the original X-Men film in the cinema, weirdly enough. I have no idea why I went to see that, but I did. But that was the only one that I ever watched. I never watched another one. And then there are loads of them now. I have no idea how many there are now. And all these other ones. And I've seen clips from them, and like the 2015 onwards kind of thing. And what always strikes me is how utterly shallow,
right,
empty, just stupid, silly, sarcastic. Everything is sarcastic. Everything is insincere. It's like there's nothing matters. Now, it's as if these people don't really live in the real world, don't have real lives. And I know that, I understand it's fictitious, of course, but
right,
the attitude that they're promoting is one where you're just, like, you don't have, no one could survive with that attitude in the real world. And therefore, by promoting it, you're debilitating people from being able to handle the real world, which seems extremely unhelpful.
So, the state of modern fiction is that you have basically anything that they promote that doesn't already exist is nihilistic and shallow. Like, that is the end of it. There's no more concise way to put it. There is nothing at the end of the rainbow. There isn't even a rainbow to look forward to go find the pot of gold at the end of it. It's just not there. It's just stimulation and pleasure that people seek after. And then,
yeah, that's what I got from this thing as well, that it's sort of constant sugar rushes of that yep. scene and then that scene and then that scene. But they don't marry up together into a narrative that has any meaning at all. It's just
right.
crap.
You can't slow it down because then you lose people's interest because their attention spans have been so decimated by, you know, modern media and whatever other sneaky tactics that your elites are playing right now. You can't have these slow developments that actually flesh out a story and create depth because that loses people's interest or it confuses them, which we'll get into the education quality later, I hope. So that the things they do promote, nihilistic and shallow, and then that only leaves the things that they describe that are actually real right now, and they're also nihilistic and shallow. Like, so either way, that you're getting nihilistic and shallowisms either being pushed on you as being a good thing, or it already exists out there in modern media, which is something you get the opposite of in these older films.
So what do you get from these older films? Why don't you describe that? Well, I realize you just did, kind of, but it'd be nice to get it, you know.
Yeah. So, it depends on the genre, even. The first film out of this group that I watched was Dr. Strangelove, and that is a great comedy. Like, it's not just sarcasm and, you know, obvious jokes that are just hanging there that you can anticipate. Like, it's Kubrick, obviously, so it's going to be amazing. But it's also comedy that's completely died out. There's a lot of very subtle jokes in it, by today's standards at the very least, that wouldn't be made, probably for fear that the audience wouldn't understand them. It's a complete decline in standards.
I hate to invoke Idiocracy, because everyone always says this, but, you know, God almighty. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's very relevant. The Man That Would Be King, the 1975 film, you get, like, actual tragedy there. And it even opens that way. It opens after the story is completed and just retells it. So you know something bad has happened somewhere along the way. So you get this sort of really, this really cool anticipation. What actually happened that you wouldn't get in the modern day films? They either make it too blatantly obvious or they never actually resolve that. Where, you know, in 1975, you have Michael Caine showing up at the start of the movie, haggard and scarred and, you know, sickly. And then by the end of the movie, you feel sad that, you know, that Sean Connery just died and Michael Caine had to escape with his severed head. Like, you wouldn't get that. You would not get anything near that. And there are 4,000,001 connections that you can make in the way of, like, this is a sad, tragic film. Oh, well, there's also some comedic parts in it. Well, there's also this other, like, whole, you know, you have an actual male relationship here. Not homosexual, which the modern world despises, and how does it survive power? You know, it is very blunt and realistic in that it doesn't. Power will corrupt people, so you get a moral message as well. So all of that is lacking from modern cinema. I don't know any better way to put it. You just don't get it. It's not there.
Yeah. See, this is what I detected from those clips of Marvel movies that I watched, that there can be no substance because the whole attitude is anti depth. It's
right.
The characters are even with the characters themselves are showing a lack of interest in anything deep, and the tone of the film, which depicts those characters, is showing a lack of interest in anything deep. So it can be nothing but this, what you're seeing, like the shapes that you're seeing on the screen in the here and now. That's all there can possibly be to it. So
right.
it's just sensory garbage, just sensory input.
Right, exactly. With Marvel especially, you can see that even their action scenes aren't eye-catching enough, so they have to add in all these different fluorescent colors that you wouldn't get from what's actually there. They have to add in like these bright blue and purple magical beams for certain characters. They have to add in these giant lasers that you would never see in real life. So even their action is something that you will never come across. It's just something to, you know, look at and get dopamine from. And even then, a way to end that series that they just finished, the Infinity War stuff, you know, at the end of one film, half of everyone dies. That's the perfect tragedy. You end it there, and you can at least get a moral message there that, you know, sometimes depending on the perspective, good doesn't just have to win. You know, there are, you know, pits and dark ages in human history. You know, it don't have to be, you know, high golden ages all the time. And they didn't even do that. They had to come back and fix all of it so that the good guys win, and then you can get your happy dopamine rush and go about your day feeling warm and cozy if you just don't care about anything more.
God. I noticed this, a similar thing in, I've forgotten what it was. I think it was there was a series. This was about 10 years ago now. There was a series on British TV about con artists, and it was supposed to be very stylish and, you know, they're lovable rogues kind of thing, anti-heroes. But actually, they had a rule, this team of con artists in the thing, had a rule that they would never con an honest man. It would only be villains that they would con. So that sort of sorts out any moral conundrum you might have with it.
Yeah.
Don't worry, they're only going after bad people. So you don't need to think about it. It's fine. So there's not even ambiguity about whether he deserved it or not. It's stated for you. Don't worry, he's a bad guy. Simple as that.
Right.
So it's all sorted out. So there's no moral conundrum. And I think this is, you see this a lot. You see this, I think increasingly the only way that a character can be bad as such is, you know, evil, is if they're not progressive enough.
Right, exactly.
If they're not open-minded about, you know, different lifestyles. Other than that, even being selfish or destructive, it doesn't seem to get punished.
As long as they have the correct ends, like the means are justified, and that's the only moral good for them. And this is how they can cast, you know, historical documentaries into being a drama. Evil is just the evil reactionary king sitting on his throne, who isn't progressive enough for the revolutionaries. Well, now we've got ourselves a modern historical drama. We don't even really have to edit very much because we've redefined everything to where people are brought up from the cradle thinking that anything not progressive is inherently evil. That's all of human history that you can just turn into basically a drama where, you know, what we would consider normal and decent people, they're now the villains, and any vile revolutionaries that come across that want to behead people or starve them to death or, you know, completely upend, you know, the family unit or anything like that, the church, they're now the good guys because they're progressive. Like,
yeah, exactly. But similarly, if it's a revolutionary or who is a threat to democracy,
right,
then no matter what the state of the democracy, no matter what the state of the society, that is going to be described as depicted as villainous.
Right.
It's a weird thing how you see this on British TV now as well, where everything reinforces the moral paradigm of today, of this age, everything. There used to be a phrase, one man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist. And so that would be shown in drama, in film, TV, whatever. Mm-hmm. That duality would be there, and it would be, you know, there would be a treatment of it. Whereas I think again now it's all or nothing. If he's a progressive, he's good, that. If he's not, then he's bad, and that's that.
Right. With these sorts of things, it takes out any ambiguity that you mentioned earlier. Every great classic novel that has a moral lesson that everyone remembers, that we have looked back to after, you know, 100, 200, 300 years, depending on the novel or the poem, it has ambiguity. Who are the good characters? Well, the book won't tell you. You have to make inferences on your own intellect. You don't get that anymore from anything modern. They have to tell you this is good, this is bad, and that is because ultimately this modern world does not have a culture, it just has propaganda. When you fast forward 100 years or so, say society's collapsed or whatever, and they're looking back on our works, they're going to wonder, you know, where's the plot? I just see, you know, this vile revolutionary people fighting against a monarch. We assume, in the modern world, that the monarch has to be bad because he's a monarch fighting against revolutionaries. But that isn't that's not some perennial value that's just there in all of human history. For most of human history, the revolutionaries would just be automatically seen as evil, and the monarch would be seen as good. When they look back at our work, they either have to look at it through the lens, it was propaganda, and that's all you can see it as, because, you know, our civilization, it can't last forever. It's going to be gone one day or another. just the way it goes. Hopefully something better replaces it. They're going to have to look at it through the lens of propaganda, or they're going to have to discard it and say, this is useless, this modern civilization produced nothing. It's a depressing state.
Yeah, I think, but you see, that's it. There has been this complete slowdown in cultural output. It's just an endless moment for the last 20 years. You could say that the intellectual content of it and the moral content of it has degraded over that time. But in other ways, it's just, I mean, as I said, I saw the first X-Men film, I think, what was that, 2000, 2001. And they've just gradually refined that formula down the last 20 years. And meantime, the propagandistic element of it has become stronger and stronger and stronger. And I think that is, you know, I often think about this myself. How is this era going to be looked at, assuming that there are intelligent people to look at it in 200 years' time or 1,000 years' time? What on earth are they going to make of the stuff, the dramas of today?
Yeah, what happened?
What happened? Especially because they can have the comparison of just, you know, 40 years earlier, there was... Kubrick, for example.
Right. Or if you go, if I may, this might be a topic change. If you look at the span of 100 years, you know, go back to the 1900s, you went from most high schools teaching Latin and Greek to their students to the modern day where colleges are struggling getting people to, you know, just a, you know, an actual grasp on the English language to the point where they can actually read their own literary works. So this is a bit tragic in a way, because a lot of those people that exist out there just for stimulation and pleasure, you know, the normie, whatever you want to call them, whatever mimetic idea you want to attach to them, they didn't bring this upon themselves. For the vast majority of them, it just kind of happened, right? They weren't born in 1960 or whatever and decided, I want to reduce all of Western civilization and white civilization's cultural institutions into dust. For most of them, you know, they have no power. Even the democracies that you have, they are just oligarchies. They are ran by people behind the scenes, businessmen, you know, pharmaceutical companies, whatever you want to call them. This has been pushed on you. And the way they've done that is in the education system, partially. They have completely destroyed any educational quality that you receive. The point earlier, you know, high school students could have learned Latin, Greek, German, Spanish, French, Dutch, in the U.S. at least. Now it's a miracle if you can get a class that the majority of them is ready for college English, which itself has been reduced and lowered down in standards. The vast majority of them, something we talked about earlier in the stream, was that Zoomers have no, they have no roots and foundation, and they're struggling to grasp for one. The vast majority of them learn none of their history at all. And that's true for any of the groups. For the European descended in America, you don't get any European history at all. It's a tertiary subject. So your high school will go through basically every other history class before it teaches European history as a topic. And even those that aren't white in the U.S., the world history that you receive is just Whig history, progressivism, you know, the world was in dark ages until the Enlightenment happened, and then, you know, the imperialism brought it to the rest of the world, and then imperialism became evil, and then they need to be kicked out by the other groups that had become, you know, noble savages or whatever. So no group is winning here, or at least on the ground. None of the peasants or the plebs are winning here. They have had their history ripped from them. It's not being passed down to them. Like, the church isn't here to collect family records anymore. Most of these families don't submit to a church. Their family themselves, it's a miracle if you get any sort of family history passed down to you for whatever reason. You know, there's a multitude of reasons. The past few generations just did not write down stories that came from their great-grandparents. So most of those oral histories have just been lost to time when those people have passed. You don't have an identity. So when you get people whose hearts are in the right place, they will, you know, do DNA tests, find their genetic composition, and then they'll basically, you know, we would recognize it as LARPing. They'll like make it their identity. I'm the majority percentage I have is 25% German. I'm a German nationalist now. Like, we might find that amusing. Some people might find it LARPy. But like that's the only shred of identity that most Gen Z Zoomers have, is one that they have to fabricate.
This is something I've noticed in the New World, in people from the New World, Americans, yep. Canadians, less so Australians. But I also notice it increasingly in Europeans as well, you know, and I've talked about this before, that increasingly the only identity is consumerism and the meaningless consumer choices that you make. Because, and obviously this will be more advanced in the New World than it is here, awareness of history and heritage is scant. It's increasingly threadbare. People don't seem to have, and I understand it, and you know, I had, this applies to me as well, but less so than obviously youngsters today. There was not much awareness of history, and definitely not much awareness of the facts of history. There were certain atmospheres, certain aesthetics that I was aware of growing up, because you would just see them around. But you wouldn't know what each one of them represented, what it meant historically, or how they linked together into a continuum. That was...
Right.
I mean, when I think now about my own history teaching, and I don't want to swamp this with my own experiences, and I'm only saying stuff that I've said before anyway. My own history teaching was crap. You know, the history education was rubbish, because... they taught us about isolated periods and mostly World War II, it has to be said.
Right.
Which again is significant. Yeah, it's significant that World War II is like the... and again, that it was a major event in recent history. So there's proximity. There's mm-hmm. temporal proximity. I get that. But it's not more significant. Why is it more significant than the formation of my country's constitution? Over time, over centuries, right. I don't understand that. I understand why it's going on. I'm just saying it is obviously ridiculous. But also, so they would teach you about individual things, periods, and it would just mm-hmm. be facts, and you'd be expected to repeat certain things that they told you about those facts.
Yeah, just regurgitate them onto a test. Yeah,
exactly. And crucially, they didn't link one era with another. So you were taught about different things in isolation, but there was no sense of continuity. There was no sense of evolution of ideas and conventions throughout time. So you didn't know, and you don't even know when. Like off the top of my head, I can't tell you when the Jacobins were, you know, when the Jacobites, when that happened. I don't know. Off the top of my head, I can't tell you when the Restoration occurred. And now obviously I bear some personal responsibility for this. Any one of us could just Google this stuff and learn it in adulthood. But clearly a good education system should, and you know, again, I don't want to shirk all responsibility for this. I'm just saying clearly a good education system would ensure that intelligent kids left school with, you know, forearmed with this knowledge.
Forearmed
with these understandings.
With their history. So yeah, just to summarize it, on the ground, the way that history is taught, if you don't just get the Whig history and then progressivism won, if you don't get that story, it's just facts, bullet-pointed facts on a slideshow on a projector in the front of the classroom. You write them down in your notes, and then you repeat them verbatim on the test for an A, if you want to. You know, sometimes you can screw around with the teachers or whatever and give them, you know, a conflicting view of history. Regardless, that's how the system is designed to work. When you put history into a slideshow, yeah, you know, we start at the medieval era, and then the age of discovery happened. Like, they don't connect it. It's just like you flip to the next slide in history, and then the Enlightenment happened. You don't connect it. You don't get a story. You don't get a mythos. You do not get a people. If they destroy your history like this, you are not a people. You can have a shared heritage, even if you even know it and can trace it back. But if you don't even have a history, you're scattered. You're atomic, isolated. You you don't have any connection with anything around you, you become, you know, the target for their perfect consumer. On the right, there's a lot of talk about, like, we don't have a unifying mythos in, like, the West right now, and it's causing a lot of issues. Well, you do have one, and it's, you know, you have your great conflict, and it was World War II. The Whig history is completely won, and that's your unifying mythos. The issue is, it doesn't have, it's not fully fleshed out, so it will lack in certain areas, and you're seeing that now. The narrative contradicts. You know, progressivism does not always win, and it does not always make people better. That's demonstrable, and you can see that with your own eyes. There is not, you can get people to deny what other people have seen, but whenever you start seeing things that directly contradict what you've been told, regardless of how lost you think the person is, it plants a seed there, right? They might not immediately convert and start being the ultra-based dissident or whatever, but there is something there to work with. Whig history, there are so many contradictions in it that as soon as hard times strike in the West, and they are going to happen, you're going to see this whole thing shatter. It's been reigning supreme since the end of World War II, but it's not going to last, which means something that the right should be doing now is having a full story to tell its people whenever this thing does shatter so that you can fill the vacuum right when you need to, right? So absolutely, we have a story to tell. We just, it's just not written down yet.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. On the matter of World War II, what are high school students, obviously you don't represent every high school student in America, but what were you taught about? Like, if you're going to speculate, what does the average American high school student today believe? Did they believe that it was fought for what? What were the reasons for the war?
I would be willing to place money on the fact that the majority, you know, not saying how big a majority because I don't know that far, but I would be willing to place money that above 50% of high school students don't know what World War II was fought over. Like, I will place my money on that. We're never going to find out because we can't get those data numbers because that no one's going to conduct that for me. But I will place money on it. You get people that by the time they graduate high school, some of them even with A's in the top 10s of their class, you know, they have no clue, you know, what were the two sides in World War II? Well, there's the U.S. on one side and who else on the other? You have Japan bombed us. And so the U.S., you get that hammered into us every December. You know, the Germans were bad, so obviously them. But who else? Who knows? They don't. You know, and then they don't know who the rest of the Allies were. The ones that do know, the vast majority of them just get the normal narrative. I remember in 2016 when I was just like opening my eyes into politics, there were people saying Generation Z is going to come along and it's going to be the most conservative generation ever. They're going to be the saviors of the West. No, the majority of the people that even care, that it can even rise above this just complete equalization into nothingness, they just buy right into this, you know. Germans were unequivocally bad, all of them. There is not a single good one in the NSDAP or that fought for them in World War II. The Japanese were evil racists and they genocided the Chinese. There was nothing good in redeeming in them. They should have been nuked more. The United States gave them, you know, we brought the world into freedom and democracy once again.
It sounds like they've all been watching Saving Private Ryan.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's for the minority that actually knew, you know, actually know a basic history of World War II, just, you know, who the sides were and who the leaders were. This is the view they'll have. And then it diverges there. You get the people that take the USA as good, or you get people that are, you know, socialists and lefties that, oh, the USSR should have won. They did all the work. They, you know, World War II was their war. Yeah, it's a shame things played out like they did in the 90s. Yeah. So you get those two diverging camps.
So, like, proper communists.
Yes, those are a thing, yes.
Now, of course, it's one... What is a proper communist, you know? I mean, even... even... Because even somebody who advocates it, they tend to like the finer things in life, like, you know, like any other sane person. So if someone does declare themselves, I am a real communist, I never know whether to take that seriously or not.
They'll spout some fiery rhetoric and then come to school with like an iPhone and coffee and all of that. So Like, yeah. It, so they're either champagne socialists or you get basically, you know, the aforementioned transgenders that are, you know, probably, they probably actually believe it, right? They aren't, most of them aren't mentally well. They're being socially pressured into a lot of things. It's a tragedy. They probably do believe these things. They probably have a burning hatred for everything around them. They probably feel trapped in it, you know, all of these other things, poor them. But then they go out and, you know, propagate this stuff. So on the other hand, not so pitiful.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was one other thing I wanted to ask you about the Zoomers. It's tangential and it might be incorrect. But it seems to me, just going on intuition, it seems to me that one of the effects of the kind of education that you've described and the kind of attitude that is promoted and that is fashionable, one of the effects of that is probably that people will find it difficult to be fascinated by things, by anything.
Yes. Yeah. So,
right.
That all generations come after now are from the Zoomers, which it's not true. You know, you have these different, like, generations will leapfrog over each other. So, you know, you'll have one that'll come from the millennials, Generation Alpha, for the most part. But just take that assumption just to make the point here. Zoomers have to pass on everything to their children, and they're the only children that are going to be coming next. You are not going to have passed down the Lord of the Rings. You're not going to pass down the Chronicles of Narnia, you know, the Legends of King Arthur. You're not going to have, like, you know, calculus passed down on any major level because most of them don't understand it. They don't pay attention. They don't care to learn. You're not going to get theology passed down, certainly. The field will just die and completely. Any literary analysis, that's dead because it's boring. History is boring, so that's not going to get passed down. You're not going to get any of the stuff passed down if it's left to the Zoomers. And if you're one of the few people watching this and you have a family or you plan to have a family or, you know, actually do something, a very great thing that you can do is learn these stories, learn these skills. You know, you can't learn all of them at once, which is why people specialize, you know, and there's going to be something that we all do better than each other. Learn these skills and have a grasp over them to where you can explain them to the people that are coming next. Because if you do not do that, the schools aren't going to do it, certainly, because they hate you. They want you to basically die after this generation. They want all of your intellectual and cultural history to just dissipate with you. They're not going to teach any of this. The older generations, I mean, they can start trying now. The vast majority of them didn't. They were the hippie generations. They propagated a lot of this. It's up to you. Any story that you do not want to see gone in history and among your people after this point, it's up to you to keep it, basically, because Zoomers have no interest in it. They are not going to seek it out and learn it. They aren't going to pass it down either. Like, that just logically follows from those two. It doesn't give them enough dopamine. It doesn't give them enough stimulation. It's not colorful enough. Or if it's something like calculus, most of them lack, you know, the skills to even get up to that point. Like, they've heard the word, but the vast majority of them, I would guarantee you, don't even know what calculus actually is. They just know it's scary math, right?
Yeah.
Or like any great literary work in English, like The Lord of the Rings is a good example. It doesn't use easy words. Like, you could read it to fifth graders, and if you like stuck with it, eventually they would start understanding. But that takes time. You know, a high schooler should be able to read it and be fine, but they can't. Like, it uses complex grammar. It uses, like, you know, it has a mythology of its own. Zoomers can't learn that. Like, and even if they could, it uses all these words are too easy to confuse with each other. They have very, you know, different meanings that can be used in different contexts that they won't know, and they don't have the attention span to go look it up or, you know, ponder a page of it or something like other people might have done in the past if they found a passage that, you know, spoke to them or whatever. It's gone. Like, it sounds like a grim message, and that's just because it is.
Well, I think you're at the forefront of this. You know, people like me have talked about this and we've speculated about what it's going to be like, what it is like out there. You're able to actually give a, you know, first-person account of it.
Right.
And yes, it is grim. I wondered about this, but the reason I asked that question was it sounded like the type of education that you're describing is one that actually deadens people's curiosity. It
yes.
switches it off.
That is exactly it. That is exactly the way to put it, and there's not much more to add. You know, Zoomers, they'll get subjected to these boring classrooms that are like poorly ventilated and dark and dreary. And why would you want to go back to that subject if that's all that you've ever been exposed to it? Like,
yeah.
The Zoomers aren't like plodding in the corner and rubbing their hands and saying, I want to make sure that, you know, King Arthur's legends die after this generation. You know, they just don't get drawn to it. No one's pushing them in that direction. They weren't raised properly, most of them. So, you know, they're just not going to go to it. Their curiosity's gone.
That's terrible. That is just awful. I mean, if anything, what else is I was going to say, what else is education for if not to enliven and encourage and nurture people's curiosity, children's curiosity? But I guess you could say it's to prepare them for the world of work. And I'm for the intelligent kids, it should be about more than that. And I'm not even sure that it does prepare them for the world of work.
I guess that's
another thing.
You see colleges continually slackening standards, you know. Like I got a bit of criticism earlier the other day, and it's fine. Like, it's the internet. You don't give grace to anyone. They just assume the worst with whatever gets said. One of my points is, you know, you're going to get these people that don't know what they're doing. They don't want to learn what they're doing, and what little they have, the standards have been slackened, and they are eventually going to have to run, you know, the electric grid, your roads, your food system. That should be a terrifying thought. And, you know, someone said, well, you don't learn any of that stuff in high school anyway, so what's the issue? Well, the issue is the vast majority of them are barely even learning what they are supposed to get under slackened standards in the high school, meaning they are now going to universities and getting even less than the previous generations got before them. And, you know, I don't know if you've witnessed this where you are, but at least where I am, a lot of the older people in a lot of the fields are just retiring because they don't want to deal with the world as it is right now. So they aren't even there really to mentor everyone. They're gone. And who can blame them? I wouldn't want to deal with it. Like, I'm one person. It doesn't matter. I could be perfect. It's still not going to fix the issue. Zoomers are getting to the universities. Those standards are getting slackened. You know, you can have people that'll, you know, my roommate's an engineer. He's followed me throughout all these videos and all that and listened, and he thinks I'm being too easy on the Zoomers a lot of the times.
He thinks you're being too easy on them.
Yeah. I made that list for Academic Agent. He said there were so many more things you could have added to that. You went easy on them. Regardless, you know, he's going for mechanical engineering, and people will just, the whole class will fail a test. And then the professors will bump it up so that they all pass. They don't have to deal with them again. And then they go on to get their degrees. But, I mean, they obviously did not learn the skills that they needed back there to go apply any of that. And when it's stuff like mathematics for engineering, that stuff's important.
Yeah.
That's the world around you.
Yeah. And, of course, this is where you get to why it matters that people have an ability to be fascinated by things.
Right.
This is why it matters that intelligent people have that ability. If you've deadened that in them, then, well, they can't apply that passion and interest and that level of intellectual engagement to any topic. They don't know what it is to be engaged with a topic.
Right, yeah. And I'm not saying we need to revitalize the education system, because this education system is terrible, even if it worked as it should. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying the standards need to go up and we need to keep the education system. What I am saying is that, like, in the past, you had people who had curiosity, they had creativity, they had social bonds that would push them into being, you know, a higher standard than they otherwise would have. They would go out and learn these things. You know, the Romans didn't have, you know, these textbooks that told them here's how to build, you know, these roads that will last for two millennium. They learned. And they wanted to learn, the vast majority of their engineers. We don't really have those cohorts anymore because all those, that curiosity, that desire to learn has just been stamped out. People were illiterate. The vast majority of Westerners were illiterate for most of our history. And yet somehow they still managed to build, you know, houses, they managed to make all of these great things, these great pieces of artwork, regardless of which group is more literate than the others. They still managed to make these things, and they're around today.
That's partly because there was an understanding and acceptance of hierarchy. So you would do what the skilled craftsman, the master craftsman, told you to do. I think now that relies absolutely on accepting that someone else is better than you. Both that they're more skilled than you, they're more experienced than you, they're more wise than you. That's gone out the window. That was passé even when I was an adolescent, you know.
Right, and for the Zoomers, just in case anyone might not see why that won't work for them, what identity do you have other than your ego and arrogance? Like, we talked about this earlier, arrogance is displayed through irony and sarcasm. It's a core part of most Zoomers' identities. It probably was for other generations, but the other generations had other things as well, so it's not just the arrogance and the ego. For the most of them, when a Zoomer has to go and admit, I don't know how to do this, I need to go and learn from someone how to do this thing, they are admitting that the core part of their identity is no longer sufficient. And they either admit that and have a crisis and become depressed, which, if you look at depression across Zoomers, really high, so are suicides, so this is happening. And the other parts, they just they won't face that fact and they won't learn. So you lose that from the master craftsman.
It sounds like a dire situation. It sounds dreadful.
Yes, it is. And the last video that I put out on Generation Z, I was trying to be... I don't like being the guy that just comes to everyone and saying, doom is upon ye, listen all ye who care for your mortal soul. The last video I put out, I tried to explain, kind of, what were the foundations for why this happened and what can be done for those of us that, don't want to be caught up in the civilizational collapse that's obviously approaching. And you don't need to look at Zoomers to see that. You can look at this from every angle possible. This is not sustainable from an economic point, religious point, from an ethnic point. It's not going to happen. So what can people do? Well, you're not going to fix it, so don't make that your goal. You're going to fail. It's not going to work. And then, whatever actions you took towards that can't be applied to basically your family or your community, it's not going to carry over. It's going to be wasted. What you all can do, start reading these things. There's a great channel, Skeptical Waves. He will put these old works to audiobook for free. Go listen to them if you can't get the actual book. If you can get the actual book, without bankrupting yourself, by all means, get it, because that's something to pass down to your family. That will stay there.
What is the book called?
Any of them. I was just being a generalization.
All right. Sorry, I was a wee bit distracted there. I was just checking on something. So
sorry.
No, forgive me.
If you can come across any book that you can get that is of good interest, get that. Start building a library. Pass it down to your children. Your family will have these books for years to come. If they know how to take care of it, that will not be leaving your family for a millennium.
Yeah. I used to work in a bookshop, and a secondhand bookshop, and we'd get things donated. And so much of it used to just get thrown out and actually pulped, which really disturbed me. It really disturbed me that would happen. And, because they just wouldn't sell. I mean, there weren't enough customers to buy all the books that,
Right.
But so much of it was useful. And I remember thinking, you could have, I remember there was a book that came in several times, and I really liked it. It was a sort of, it was a DIY book, and it was like a big, thick hardback. And with a sort of nice cover, with a picture of a house, with all these different, it was a picture of all the different tasks that you might have to do in each room of this house. It's a nice cover. It was packed, absolutely packed, full of useful tips and information about how to get that job done, how to fix that problem, and so on. And I remember thinking that we ended up throwing that out each time it came in. It would go off to get pulped. And I remember thinking, this is such a waste of knowledge. Somebody somewhere is going to wish, especially if we do lose the internet and everything, the apocalypse occurs, then someone is going to wish that they had a copy of this book in their house.
Yeah.
And it's such a shame.
if you do get like a civilizational collapse, even on the scale of like an African country, it doesn't have to be, you know, the dramatized depictions of meteors falling from the sky and lava flowing into the streets. Like, it could just be, you know, you don't have electricity enough for you to go online to actually find out how to fix these things. And going to the experts won't help because they're gone, right? So you actually have to have at least a small working knowledge in order to survive. And so, you know, get books. They're a great resource. Have a family if you can. You know, that's the other thing. You want to actually make sure that you have people to pass this stuff on to. You don't want everything to just end with you. And you want to make sure that you establish a very good bond with your community. It could be a church congregation. It could be the people that you live directly next to, your, you know, immediate neighbors. It could be, you know, extended family. Like, all of these groups are great nodes of people that historically stay together in times of strife. And that's what you're going to head into. You're going to need to draw upon those same relationships. You're going to need those same, you know, you're going to need that knowledge of which to share with them. And last but certainly not least, you're going to need to have the you're going to need to have the capacity to actually lead in some capacity. You don't need to be, you know, the next Napoleon Bonaparte on a great horse, you know, leading an army to another country, but you need to at least be able to lead a family.
Absolutely. I think that there are all sorts of ways in which people need to sort of reinvent themselves, because, and not just for the Zoomers, it's also millennials, even Gen X. And as for the next generation, God knows what they're going to have to do. But certainly the institutions of our society are not going to serve them well. And I think that people are going to just, I think the sort of default advice is you are going to have to learn to do things for yourself, including teaching yourself things. You're going to have to learn how to find the knowledge that you need and get things done. Because I think increasingly, all right, first of all, now, in here and now, our institutions are corrupt and useless, and they don't do what they're supposed to do. But second, at some point, they're going to fall apart, and they're just not going to be there anymore. So for these two different reasons, I think people are going to have to master a level of self-sufficiency that we really haven't known for several generations. But it's not like we haven't known it for 1,000 generations. I mean, I think that our great-grandparents were probably able to fix most problems around the home.
If you know anyone still alive that was around during the Great Depression, you know, they had more than enough knowledge for, you know, how to run things, how to fix things, how to make sure that you can, you know, keep using something even after it may look broken. Like, they have more than enough knowledge to subsist you through what's going to happen, because I don't know what it was like in the UK, but the Great Depression over here, especially in the Great Plains, was a it was something else. Like, you had people that basically had to go back to subsistence farming with, you know, mediocre tools. I doubt it was that bad over there, but
no, it wasn't. But they also had the war, the World War II, where they had to learn how to make do and all that kind of stuff. Sort of a not as harsh, but an equivalent experience. Somebody has written in the comments here, knowledge loss is a huge issue in multiple industries. There are manufacturing plants out there that don't have anyone left that can run the thing manually after the boomers retired.
Yeah. And here's the scary thought. It's not just going to be the manufacturing plants. It's, you know, that's a reality. As the commenter pointed out, facing many industries, and a lot of those are vital. You need a lot of those to live the life that you've probably been living since you were born.
I wish
I had an answer.
I know. Somebody writes, it's always darkest before the dawn, and the dawn will come. And another person said, this isn't blackpilling, in my opinion. It just is what it is. We deal with it. Which is, I think, a good attitude to have. It's a necessary attitude to have. We are just going to have to fucking deal with it.
Right. Thankfully, that person got what I've been trying. That's the attitude that I want people to go away with. I don't want them to feel defeated and nihilistic and depressed. It's just like, you need to know what's out there and what's happening in order to deal with it. You can't fight a battle that you don't know is happening, really.
Yeah. Okay, there are several questions that I wanted to get to, or just comments from people. Hold on a second. Okay. Oh, I just fell off the turnip seed truck, but I don't know what he means by that. But I wonder, Ryan, when you mentioned that we are intentionally atomized, do you think that this refrain from kinship or any meaningful identity is especially targeted when it comes to Germans and Scots-Irish or English white people in America?
Yeah, so falling off the turnip truck is a colloquialism here. Play on words. But yes, most certainly. And if you look at those groups, in the U.S. at the very least, when they came over here, Scots-Irish, the English, and the Germans had the strongest bonds out of most of the immigrant groups that came over here. Like, you had French, Swedes, Dutch, Welsh. They would all basically assimilate into the society around them. Sorry, stutter. They would assimilate into the society around them. They would lose a lot of their, you know, their mother religion, their mother tongue. They would lose, you know, a lot of their identity for most of them. Not the Germans, not the English, and not the Scots-Irish. And that's not even because those three were the majority groups. It's not because they had numbers. Like, even in, like, you would have enclaves of these groups surrounded by everyone else, and they would still somehow keep their language, keep their identity, and they would keep their family history as well. That was another big thing for these people, is you cannot lose family history. You know, if you go back, you know, 200 years or so to the United States, any of these groups could probably trace you all the way back to 1400 or so. Like, it was just passed down to them. So you can't have a, you know, progressive tyranny while also having a multi-ethnic, multilingual empire at home that, you know, has an identity, right? That goes against progressivism at the core. It's not easy to manage. They are going to resist you on certain things. The Germans won't like prohibition because they like beer. The Scots-Irish aren't going to like universal voting because they have actual, you know, hierarchy within their families, especially so if they're Calvinists. That was another major group that settled the South. They will not like egalitarian voting that you get with the progressives. And then the English are going to oppose, like they did in the Civil War, any attempt at centralization because that's not English. All of these groups had to be wiped out to get the modern country that you are in today. And that was no accident. And the vast majority of the people that perpetrated it, or at the very least were the public face, admitted this. You know, a lot of the, I use prohibition as an example, which is still in effect in some counties today. That was a direct attempt by the progressive movement in the United States to wipe out German culture. The second most spoken language in the United States for the longest time was German. And basically that was the main language in the Midwest. They wiped that out because that was dangerous to their centralizing tendencies.
Yeah, it's an incredible thing about German. I read that like before World War I, there were many German communities throughout America where that was the only language. That was the language of that town. Which is just unimaginable now. I mean, it's incredible to hear that.
So I mentioned before we went live, for anyone that doesn't know, I am a Lutheran. If you visit Lutheran cemeteries, if they're old enough, you go back. And then for whatever reason in the United States, I'll let you guys infer, whenever you get to about 1917, the graves stop being in German. They stop carrying with them, you know, the family logos and all that. And they suddenly become English, and they suddenly lose a lot of their style that came with it, or that came with the German language, right about 1917 in the U.S. And that's also the time where, you know, in some places it became illegal to speak German over the phone, or, you know, use it in writing or in letters or in telegraphs. So, you know, you'd get English forced on these people. I'll let you infer as to why that might be, but it's just something that happened.
Yeah, really amazing. There was and horrible actually. Okay. Now there were two comments. Okay, somebody said, "I didn't know the COVID generation is being called Generation Alpha." That's eerie. And yes, it is. I think that name was coined before COVID. I think. Well, yes. You know, you don't know when COVID was coined, really, do you? Well, but anyway,
it was coined before before it became a giant scare. But yeah, a lot of what we've described have been it's all been in play for decades now. I can't help but think that Generation Alpha, you know, the clean reset, like that goes right in with what's being pushed on us right now. A great reset, one might even say.
Yeah, indeed. It's pretty sinister. Gus Fays, on what we were saying a few minutes ago, I've worked at a lot of places where people in their 50s and 60s are holding the place together with nobody who wants their job. The responsibility, I guess. And well, yeah, I can imagine that. God, it's amazing. Because I can remember the boomers when they were young. I can remember the boomers when they were in their 30s. Like, when I was a child, the boomers were in their 30s.
Yeah.
And now they're the senior generation. You're like, they're the ones who are retiring. It's incredible.
One small point, because that brings up something. A lot of the jobs that the boomers are holding down, they're not glamorous. No Zoomer is raised to say, oh, when I grow up, I want to be a shopkeep or something like that. And they don't think I want to run the electric grid when I grow up. They get basically every one of them in some sort of egalitarian fashion get told, you need to become the most glorious and glamorous job or worker for these jobs that are possibly out there. You can all become lawyers and doctors and, you know, all these other things you'll have a great life ahead of you and everything will just be handed to you on a silver platter after you make it that far. Well, that's what they're indoctrinated with from the cradle. They're not going to want to take up these very necessary jobs like welding, plumbing, electricity, shopkeeping, you know, and any of these things that are necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it might surprise you to know that there was the start of that. I absorbed that. It was never explicitly said. But somehow I had that attitude. When I left school, I thought, I don't need to, I can start with a fairly glamorous job or fairly high up. And it was utterly unrealistic. I mean, it was
right.
Completely unrealistic. And that's a big part of why I failed in early adulthood, because I just didn't go into it with realistic expectations. They're wholly outlandish. So if that is what young people are being led to believe, it's no, absolutely not.
If I may, just because, from the religious point of view as well, that also means there are very little Zoomers alive right now that just think, oh, when I grow up, I want to go lead a congregation. I want to preach to them and serve them as a shepherd, as a pastor, as a priest, you know, whatever you might call it. There is going to be very little, if any, spiritual guidance coming from the Zoomers, because most of them don't even know, if you ask most of them, how do you become a lawyer? Most of them would be able to tell you, oh, you go to law school, you get your degree, and then you start practicing. And,
yeah.
You know, they might not know about bar exams and all that, but regardless, none of them will be able to tell you, well, how do you lead a congregation? How do you become a priest in the Catholic Church? How do you become a pastor for the Lutherans? How do you start a church as a Baptist? Like, they won't know that. They're not going to do that. They won't want to do that. The only saving grace there, if you're a Christian, is that, well, God will lead these people to do it whether they want to or not. So, you at least have that assurance to fall back on.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just not going to be pretty.
But in even more dark than that is that I think a lot of people don't have it in their heads that one day they could be parents, and one day they could have a household of their own, a family of their own. And so that idea is not implanted into their heads. It doesn't develop over time.
Right.
It's actually quite an alien concept. Again, even for my generation,
yeah,
you know, I think a lot of my friends did. It never was a thing. Like, one day you could be married. You know just didn't occur to many people.
So I'm surprised we didn't get to that topic, because that's been one of the things that I've been, you know, shouting from the top of the hills about. For the vast majority of the Zoomers, for the women at the very least, with what I saw when I was there and what I still see in the universities, the vast majority of the women think, well, I could get married, I could have a family, but that's tertiary, if that. I need a career, I need to support myself, I need to be independent. And we can get all these Chestertonian things of like, well, you're never independent, you're just relying on one thing or the other. right? They aren't going to consider that. But they do still have, from the cradle, mind you, they're like, this isn't, they aren't just suddenly hit with this when they're 18. They're told this from the time they're born. A lot of the female Zoomers, you know, you need to get a career. You need to be independent. You don't need a family. You don't need children. They are secondary to you. You are what matters. And I'm not saying that to, like, you know, be rhetorical here. A lot of them are told, you are what matters. You come first. You know, it's only anyone else that comes second for you women. And then a lot of the men as well. You know, there's a 50% divorce rate in the United States. You know, a lot of the men just state that it is. They don't really have any sort of father figures. So it's not just the women that are going to be at fault here. A lot of the men don't even know what it is to be a responsible father. You know, thankfully, I don't want to come off as the guy that's like, everyone's wrong but me. Thankfully, I had a good father. There are people that I know that had good fathers. We are in the minority. It is not the majority of people that had this. The majority of Zoomer males don't know what responsibility is. They might eventually find out, but it's not going to be through having a family, because the vast majority of them are going to have a hard enough time to even get there in the first place when they have their, like, life sorted out, let alone the ones that don't.
It's just remarkable. And again, I can see parallels with my own generation. It seems it's a worse version of a tendency that is absolutely there in the millennials. That we were, and again, I don't really know how we absorbed it, because, or how we developed it, because it was never explicitly said. Right. And it wasn't even implicit. It's not like the dramas we watched on TV were full of people being lazy and irresponsible. Somehow it was there. I think, like, from, like, maybe age 10 or like the 90s, I think it was maybe there in the culture as a thing, and people picked up on it. But it was very subtle.
For the vast majority of them, if you don't get raised with those grand myths, those stories, those histories, anything like that, you don't get to it, or with the church, you know, that's the other thing that's missing. You don't get to know what a proper family looks like. You just don't get to know it. It's not that you wanted to tear it down. It's not that you rejected it. You just never came to know it. And so it doesn't matter if it's explicitly told to you. The fact that you're just quietly never told that, like, it's not given to you. This is the natural conclusion of all of that. With the Zoomers, it has been explicitly told to them mostly by people that just naturally developed this because they lost all of those foundations.
Yeah. It's a weird process by which something emerges and is at first subtle, but then eventually becomes formalized and promoted and becomes the norm. A very destructive thing. It's amazing. But again, our society's, all of its defenses have been deactivated, so it's not going to, there is not going to be any resistance to bad ideas. Here's a nice comment from Luke, and he says, wow, you're a very insightful guy, Ryan. I'm a Swiss-German by way of the Mennonites, and your comments just make me remember how bright the lowland Germans from Germany are. That's the Bavarians and the Swabians, and I've forgotten about the ones on the west corner, the southwest corner.
Württemberg and Baden.
That's right, thank you. For insights into the historic relationship between our different German peoples, read the novel Heidi. I think that's a children's thing. I remember seeing an adaptation of that when I was small. I think that's all of the... Oh, somebody asks how old you are.
18 years says, old.
18. So, yeah, it's quite something. You are. I mean, I don't want to patronize you by saying you have wisdom beyond your years or whatever, but yeah, you do seem very mature for your age, if you don't mind me saying. All right. Well, let's end it there, because we've been going for an hour and 20 minutes, and it's nearly 6 a.m. where I am, so I think probably is time for beddy byes.
It's very impressive what you've ended up doing. The only way I can describe it is Herculean. Like, it's It's a lot of things to do.
It is, but this is the first night where I feel like I've got into a good routine. I was actually quite tired. Good. I was quite tired indeed throughout the previous nights, but this one seems to be, I'm not even tired now. I mean, this is the fifth stream. So, yeah. There
Very
we go.
Good.
But probably by the end of it, I will be a bit of a mess.
well, you
anyway,
know.
It'll be worth
eventually,
it.
You will sleep well.
Oh, yeah.
So there's always that to look forward to.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's fun now.
I mean, I definitely look forward to the interviews every year, and it's really strange that I'm on it now. So, like,
not so strange. You've got a lot of wisdom and experience to impart. So, thank you for appearing.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right, people can find your channel. It's linked below, and I hope they do go and subscribe. Okay, I will be back tomorrow night with four streams. First, the Woodlander, then the Fergan, then Vico Hesler, and then Blackpilled. So there we go. That's a really interesting mix of
it's
people.
It's a good lineup.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to all of those for different reasons. So yeah, it should be an interesting night. All right. I'm going to sign off now. So thank you, Ryan, for appearing on Millennial 2021.
It's been a pleasure.
Okay. I'll see you all tomorrow. In the meantime, bye-bye for now.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.